Hello and welcome to the Vela Diaries. My name is Georgie Worker.
And I'm Stevie Hall, and this is our podcast for the cycling enthusiast.
Stevie is here to give his professional experience, while I'm here to ask all the questions. So this week we've completely changed up, and we have our first ever guest speaker on the pod.
Yeah, it's been an eventful day. So immediately before recording this, we went and swam at Wongong Dam up in the Perth Hills, which a lot of people don't think you can swim in. Yeah, I spent my whole childhood swimming in it, and there's a lot of signs telling you not to swim in it.
Yeah, I let Stevie splash about in there for at least 5 minutes before I went in, just to see if he had any immediate reaction to the water.
Well, I think it's advised that you don't, but I don't think it's prohibited.
It looked okay. It was a little bit murky, but yeah, it was nice. I got a few little videos of it. Not going to lie, I was a little bit nervous to get into the water because there's a rope swing and you can swing yourself into the water. So yeah, that went well.
I think a lot of people, especially for the five dams ride that we do, the Grand Fondo we do in Perth, you go through like Wongong and Serpentine Dams and Canning Dam. These are all roads that I grew up in, I guess, when I first started riding my bike. So I know the roads quite well. And yeah, Wongong Dam. Sure enough, there is a little area that you can swim in. So we were swimming off the rope that we've been doing, again, since I was a kid. And then I decided to go around to the other part where you can just kind of walk into the water. And I saw what I thought was a very dead snake.
It looked very flat, a little bit squished.
So I got a closer look at it. And then the snake proceeded to take off and reveal itself as a tiger snake. And go immediately into the reeds in the water that I was about to be swimming in.
Yeah, and for those of you not in Australia, tiger snake, not good.
I think it's one of the most poisonous snakes in the world.
Oh god, you didn't tell me that at the time.
I remember I asked someone, I think I was talking to my dad, about, I didn't know whether I'd seen a tiger snake before, and he said, well, if you'd seen one, you'd know, because it's got like a bright yellow belly.
Oh yeah.
And a black top. Anyway, very poisonous snake and very, I guess, common in WA.
Yeah, we were walking towards like the water's edge, and that's when we saw it. As soon as I saw it, I was like, nope, and just walked away. I was like, I'm done.
I think the most unsettling thing is probably a real unfair advantage is the fact that snakes can swim. That doesn't feel right.
I don't like that.
That's not right at all.
We start off all of our episodes with our highlight and our lowlight of the week. These may or may not be cycling related. My low is that I am currently on call at the moment and I hate it. I think I've already used that as a low before in the pod. Maybe we're not allowed to repeat our old lows, but that is a low because you just wait in anticipation for your phone to ring and I don't enjoy that. And I also can't really plan my week ahead. So that's not been great. And then I did enjoy my weekend. That was really nice.
I was trying to remember what we did.
Give me a good look. We saw your family. It was lovely. Yeah, that was great. What's your highlight and your low light?
Highlight was probably racing on Tuesday. It was the last Tuesday night twilight race for the summer. That sounds bad right now. The summer's almost ending. But
yeah, why?
Yeah, I think they've had four or five races. This is Rashad's run a really nice a twilight criterium. So. And the guys from work came down and we shot some new content. We had a few of the guys in the team racing. It was just a really nice night.
And to top it all off?
I won.
Yeah.
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 The team raced really well. It was awesome. We haven't been together for a little while now. I've had a couple of guys injured. A lot of my teammates had a second baby.
Aww.
And a few other things. Yeah, so it was nice to get the whole team out there and a few more bigger races coming up to finish the criterium season. So,
I think every time you come home when you've raced and I've not been there, you'll never like straight away tell me how the race went. Like, did you win? Did you not win? Normally you've won, but you just don't tell me you won. And I'm like, so how did it go? And you're like, I won. I was like, oh, great. Well done.
I didn't realize it did. That's fine.
Yeah.
Low light, I don't really have one. I don't know. I think that this week went quite quickly.
Yeah. I guess we can say like all the COVID restrictions that they're putting out. That's pretty
Yeah, it's hard to know what to think. It's almost, but you're better off not reading the news, I think.
I think I'm going to stop doing that. Stevie sent me a thing yesterday and then I started reading everyone's Facebook comments. Biggest mistake. Don't ever do that. Yeah.
Basically, we're waiting to the 5th of February where we're told that the restrictions that we've been having for 2 years now will be lessened or open, essentially. So we're waiting to hear what that looks like. But at the moment, it just seems like there's more and more things that keep getting added. So we'll wait for bated breath for
We
that.
await in anticipation. This week we have our first ever guest on the Velo Diaries.
Introducing Murray Hall, former Australian racing cyclist and current president of X Speed Cycling Club.
And above all, Stevie's father. So, first of all, Murray, hello. Tell us a bit about yourself and your background in cycling.
Firstly, thanks for having me on Velo Diaries. It's a pleasure to be here. My background goes back a fair way. I started competitive cycling, first pinned a number on when I was 12 years old. So that's where that started. And still do it a little bit these days. The discipline has changed a little bit in that I now, most of my time's on the mountain bike, but that's beside the point, still pushing a bike. So it's been a long time. It's been a great journey.
And so, how did you first begin cycling?
Well, it's a funny story because my parents, from when I was old enough to be pushed in a pram, used to send me to Sunday school on Sunday, and the kids next door used to take me there, but had to go every Sunday. It was just something that the family did, and I got caught wagging Sunday school. And because my father come from the sport, he said to me, "You need to do something, son, on Sunday mornings." And the next week, we went for a ride down to the local club racing, which was in Mortialik in Victoria, and we stood there, and he said to me, "Do you reckon you could beat these kids?" And being a smart 12-year-old, I said, "Yeah, no worries, we can do that." And started racing the following week, so that's exactly where I started.
Throughout your career, where did you most enjoy racing? Obviously, you raced in Australia a lot and overseas and other places. Where do you think you enjoyed the most?
And that's a really hard question. I had a magnificent run when I was living in racing and based in Europe, in that I raced in South America a few times in Trinidad, Barbados, Canada. I raced all those European countries that were close, like Germany and Spain and France, UK, obviously, Denmark. I loved. I'd probably pick out Denmark as the favourite. Because it resembled Australian style of racing. The roads were fast, there was heaps of track racing in the summer there. I could race nearly every day of the week, whether it be criteriums or road or track racing. So if I was to pick a favourite, it would have been Denmark.
So what's a race you're most proud of?
That's a really hard question to answer because I had a terrific run as a competitive cyclist. I started off, I guess, as a at a very high level of track cycling. As I got a little bit older and a bit slower on the track, I turned to the road, and I had a second half of my career on the road as well. So, and I had good victories on both. So it's a bit hard to isolate one particular event or day, but I had a few of them. I guess if I wanted to pick a couple out that were good to me, the first one would be, I guess, one of the most ruthless wins I had, and it was the Australian Madison Championship that I won, professional Madison Championship that I won with Dave Sanders, and it was held in Lavington in New South Wales in 1981, and it comes to mind or sticks in my mind as one of those, a particular an event. It was a week out from the Bendigo Madison. It was a highlight of the season, obviously being an Australian Championship, and the competition and the level of A-grade cyclists then was outstanding, and a lot of them. And we went to the event. There'd been some animosity at the A-grade level for a few weeks leading into it, and we had come to the conclusion that, that there wouldn't be any compromise on the night, and that we would just race. And Dave and I were on fire that night. We just had a really good night out. We were fit anyway at that end of the season, but we finished up winning the Australian Championship by two full laps on a big track. And that hangs around with me pretty well. It's probably one of the best memory wins because it was genuine and it was hard. And it was a 2 hour, 100 km Madison, which, as you would know, Stu, there's not too many passengers at the end of 2 hours like racing like that. And I guess another one that I had a couple of years after that is I won a 10-kilometre scratch race championship of Australia at Coburg in Victoria. But if you had asked, because of the quality of the field that was there, if you had asked me before the event if I thought I'd stand on the dais, I would have been a bit apprehensive about that. But I won that event, and I remember leaving the venue that night thinking, well, that was not a bad add-on because I didn't see that one coming. So there's a couple there that stick in my mind.
I guess with that, and something that I think about a lot, is that when we ask someone who was a good cyclist or your coach, is that we often tell some of the best stories in terms of, you know, races that you won. But an interesting question that I like to ask, and I think you can always learn from, is there a race that, I guess, still haunts you or that bothered you for a long time where it didn't go your way?
Yeah, there always is. You'll lose more races than you'll ever win. You know that. And I think one of the ones that did stick in my mind, it doesn't hurt me, it just, it niggles me a little bit, is that I finished second in the Commonwealth Games Scratch Race Championship. And the guy that won it was a terrific mate of mine, an English fellow that I had been racing and hanging out with when I'd been in England in the season before, and actually come back after the Commonwealth Games and spent some time with me in Australia. So we were good mates. Anyway, he got away for a few laps from the finish, and we were bringing him back at 1,000 mile an hour, and he stayed away and he won by about half a wheel, and I ran second. Now, to run second in a Commonwealth Games race was pretty special. I was thrilled to the back teeth to have got a medal. That was the primary thrill at the time. But as time went on, you think, gee, I wish I had been half a wheel stronger. Mm. You know, so that's the one that sort of sticks a bit. But I mean, I'm not offended by it, not hurt by it, but you really wouldn't have minded a different colour, that's all.
I guess with that as well, it's that sometimes you feel that you win second and sometimes it feels like you lost the race. And in terms of a lot of races, do you think that was, you still won the silver rather than it was a race that you potentially could have won?
Yeah, I think I got pleasure from winning the silver.
Yeah.
I think you're right,
yeah.
Yes.
And what age were you when you retired, and I guess what did you transition to after for work?
I finished racing competitively at elite level when I was 37 or 38 years of age. I won my last Australian championship in the team's pursuit, and I retired thereafter.
I think that was a few days after I was born.
That's correct. That's yeah. Exactly right. You were at the track that day. You wouldn't remember it, but you
were. I was like 3 days old.
Yeah.
And sat on the fence watching. And because of family and life commitments to work and stuff like that, then I stood back then from the sport, and I had about 5 years out of the sport completely, just to deal with those issues of family and work, etc. And then when I came back into the sport in 1999, I came back in as an administrator, and I was probably conned a little bit at the time. I didn't think that I would go in that direction, but I finished up very quickly from 0 to 100 mile an hour to be president of the West Australian Cycling Federation at the time. So I came back in at a fairly high level, and I continued as an administrator. Well, still am, I guess. So that's 22 years I've been an administrator of the sport, following a career that was very good to me.
And I guess a question to follow on to that, how different was the sport back then at the end of 99 compared to where it's at now within Western Australia?
The sport was in a little bit of trouble then, but at a different level. At the administration, state level administration, was in a bit of strife then, and I think that's how I got shuffled into the job at that point in time. And the track, unfortunately, if you want to stay with where the track was, the World Championships had been held here at the Speed Dome in 87. So this wasn't long after that. And 97, sorry, in 97. And unfortunately, the success of the World Championships being held here didn't carry over to local usage and promotion of the track. And it was at a point then when I first got involved as an administrator that the state government was prepared to shut the track down because it was of its limited use. So then I guess I picked the ball up with a few other really good allies, and we concentrated on bringing the track back to a level that it deserved, and got people involved, and good people and good volunteer base and the rider growth built to a point where a few years later we were running Grand Prix of world standard and we could put 110 people on the track or 100 people on the track for club racing. So, you know, we lifted the game and we did the right thing by the venue.
And in terms of, I guess, your administrative part in the sport, what is like an event or what are you most proud of, in, I guess, in that space rather than being as a racing cyclist?
As a promoter or as a person that was involved in running the track here at Midvale, my biggest accolade would have to have been running the Chevron Grand Prix in 2010, 2012, and a few winter Grand Prix as well. They were all UCI events. And you will recall, because you were there, that we had absolute full houses. We had the best riders, some of the best riders in the world there. And they were really quality events. We paid the best prize money that the world had ever seen for single day track races in the world. And we rode the crest of a wave there for a few years with those promotions. And I'm very proud of that.
And I guess going in a different direction, how do you feel, or what is it like to be the parent of an athlete? Like, I guess that's a really important question for a lot of people, whether they grew up in the sport or not, and their kid follows their footsteps, or both as just a parent in general. What's it like to see your kid compete?
It's quite traumatic. It really is. I know myself when I'm on the bike, I think I know what I'm doing. But I watched you as you grew up as a kid, and it's quite daunting for a parent to be looking on, and in a sport that can be a little bit dangerous too, you know. So you've always got that in the back of your mind as a parent. You don't want to ever see anyone get hurt, let alone your own kid. So that sticks in your mind a little bit. And it's not an easy game to play, being a parent with a kid in a sport, and you need to be conservative. You don't want to overpower the child, the athlete. And I say that to any parent, you know, stand back, let the kid enjoy what he's doing. That's the most critical part of the process. And I hope that I did that. At the same time, being encouraging and being available to you. And one of my greatest memories of your career is the times that you and I spend together where you would bounce your tactical plans and discussions through me. And I absolutely loved those discussions because they were genuine and they were advantageous to both of us, me as a parent and you as a young athlete, to have those really heart-to-heart conversations about how can I do this better, and I really enjoyed that.
Do you think in terms of that, especially when it comes to race tactics, that there were a lot of similarities, that the sport hadn't changed in the tactics, I guess, of a road race or the tactics of a particular scratch race or something on the track? Do you think that even though the sport evolved, the conversations were still very relevant to things that you'd raced, or the sport had changed a little bit?
I think they were exactly the same. I can remember you and I in deep discussion about different events and different reasons, and when I was talking to you, I was thinking in exactly the same space as I would have spoken to anyone else 20 years before. So I don't think tactically there was a lot of differential. You probably taught me a few modern things, but in general, I think we were both on the same page 20 years apart.
Do you think that while racing stayed the same, that the training was vastly different compared to what you would have done when you were growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the big differential between my era and your era, is the huge amount of training that you guys put in now to get to the same level. You're stronger, you're faster, you're more powerful, and that has all come through better quality training techniques, nutrition, the whole box and dice, where back in my era, and I'm talking, you know, the late 70s through to late 80s, it was considerably different. And a lot of that time was a complete do-it-yourself job, whereas now you've got the benefit of institutes of sport and you've got coaches who actually know what they're talking about, whereas my time, you were self-appointed coach as well as the bike rider. It was a different environment.
It might be drawing your memory back a bit now, but when you were planning for an event or for a race, would you ride it out, or how would you plan the next week ahead? And do you remember what that would look like? Say, for example, you were preparing for a race on the road. Would you go out the start of a week and know what you're going to do each individual day, or would it be you just woke up and you kind of did what or you
No,
felt?
no, I was good at that. I planned that well, and I know exactly what you're saying there. I would write to a race if I thought that was beneficial for the bigger picture in 2 or 3 or 4 weeks later on, then yeah, I'd do it, absolutely. I think I had good vision in planning out my season and knowing when I was to be at my best. I don't think I had any doubt about that.
And do you still ride now, and are you still competitive?
Yeah, I'm pleased to say that I do. But as I mentioned earlier, I guess 90%, no, I'll rephrase that, all of my competitive cycling now is with the mountain bike number pinned on. And that comes for a couple of reasons. I certainly haven't walked away from the other disciplines of the sport, road or track. But from a competitive point of view, I just find I'm enjoying the mountain bike, and because of where I live and I guess a little bit of age slips in where training on the road is not my favourite thing to do. If I go out on the road bike, it'll be on bike paths and things like that. I think it's a personal safety issue. I'm sick of fighting with motorists and cars and things like that. So it's easy to be on the mountain bike, and I enjoy that. I still enjoy the competitive spirit. So at the moment, I'm still riding some good events. You know that I love the mountain bike camaraderie and the events that they put on here, like Seven and Dwelling Up. They're fantastic events, and I really enjoy riding them.
Do you think from when you competed that the original, I guess, rivalry or, like, I guess, feeling to want to go well in the race still continues despite your age? Like that fire doesn't go out when you're still competing? Like, do you still strive to, I guess, compete at the highest level you can in that event?
Yeah, look, there's a bit of a joke around that as you get older, you just pin the number on you and you'll go out there just to have a ride. Well, that's absolute rubbish, because you coming from the sport, coming from competitive sporting background, once someone pins the number on your back, it's all go. It's full bore. And it doesn't matter what anyone says to you or what you've said to yourself before the event, I'll take it easy for the first 50Ks, or I'll do this, or I'll do that. The competitive spirit kicks in. You still think you're 30 years younger than you are, and you'll drive yourself into the ground. That's just the way life is.
I guess my one of our final questions, and I've asked you this before, but it was many years ago, and I'm kind of curious to see whether you answer it the same. But if you and I were to have a race against each other during both of our peak, who would win and why?
Okay, well, you need to separate the years, because you'd tear my legs off at any given point in time because you're far fitter. If we were for somehow on a level playing field, I'll race you any day, mate.
your original answer was that I'm faster, but you're a hell of a lot smarter. Was your initial answer? I remember you said that to me when I was about 15 years old, so I still remember that.
There you go. I think you're right.
Yeah.
If I was, can I say that again? Because I reckon that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I reckon you're smart.
All right, that concludes this episode of the Velo Diaries. Thank you, Dad, Murray, for joining us, and hopefully we have some more guests in the future. But yeah, first of all, thanks, Dad, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure to be on the Velo Diaries, and I've no doubt that you'll get bigger and better and stronger interview people in the future. Good luck to you.
Thanks. Well, that's all for this week. Thank you for listening to our pod. Please subscribe and give us a follow on Instagram. It's vela.diaries. And give us a like on Facebook.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and keep sending your questions in and supporting the pod.
Thank you. And also thanks to everyone who did send in their goals, what they're achieving. I like one of them said they wanted fives like Stevie. So send them in. They're great. I love reading them. Have a good one. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.